Welcome to Unbooking the Territory as we continue our journey through the highest and lowest TV rated episodes for the Monday Night Wars for each creative period. This week sees Bruce Pritchard and Jim Cornette's lowest rated episode.
May I proudly present my personal, close, good friend, Brother Love!
You're obnoxious, you steamroller people! You push people around and you push your agenda and your ideas, whether it's in the locker room or the boardroom.
And if this man can help me, I know he can help every one of you out there.
I've known you for 30 years, and it's always been the same thing. You're arrogant, and you have overstepped your bounds, and people are getting sick and fed up with you, just like usual. We gave you an inch, you took a mile, now I'm giving you a foot out the door, you're fired.
Not in this universe or any ever will you ever be my boss. So I'd greatly appreciate it if you could find your way out of my ring.
This is horrible, this is not something to be laughed at, and I'm gonna tell you one thing, I will call my mother.
So how are you this week, Dan?
Not too bad, mate, not too bad. Woefully ill-prepared. This week, I made my notes for this week's episode about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and I realised an hour before we started recording that I'd watched the wrong episode. So I'm just getting it out there now. I won't have my usual in-depth analysis of everything because I bashed this out in about 45 minutes when I normally take at least an hour and a half.
It's funny though, because about a week ago when I sent a message to the group chat saying I'd watched this episode, you replied back saying, "You are right, love." And I thought that was because you'd seen the episode, knew the quality of it, and were checking on my mental state afterwards.
That's exactly what I was doing, but about the wrong episode.
The episode before was just a completely random one.
Yeah. I'm really good at this. This is what I get for trying to be proactive. I'm shit at it. I should just wing it and just be a complete fuck up as usual. It seems to work out all right.
Well, it's absolutely fine because we can paper over the craps, but
never a truer word has been spoken on a
podcast. Shut up, you are papering over your crap.
And you've just heard the voice of the guest there that we're going to get to paper over the cracks. So what more can be said about this man, really? In 1710, George Berkeley posed the question in his book, A Treatise Concerning the Principles of Human Knowledge. If a tree falls in the woods and no one is there to hear it, does it make a noise? Philosophers debated this for centuries, but now they have to ask themselves, if there's a podcast that Mags doesn't appear on, is it a podcast?
Get the fuck. That is brilliant. And very, very accurate. If you have a podcast out there, no matter the topic, get me on it.
And you'll cover up the cracks.
I will definitely paper over all the craps.
I'm that at sixes and sevens. Rob told me he was going to do that intro, and I'd completely forgotten about it.
That was brilliant. That's probably my favourite intro ever.
Well, it was planned for two episodes ago when he came on, but Dan just jumped in and just started talking and forgot about it. So.
As Dan tends to do.
Well, I'll be taking a back seat on this one, lads, because, as I said, I've copped it up.
To be fair, you didn't miss much.
Before we get on to this show, in real time, and we're several weeks behind, obviously, with all these that were pre-recording, like the WWF used to massively record in advance, we've just dropped our first episode, and we've had some really, really good feedback. Neil, who we know from the wrestling, Dan, said he can't listen to this without wanting to chant Yorkshire.
Is that Neil had said?
It is, yeah.
Oh, I love Neil. I miss him.
Oh, it'd be great to go to shows with them again once all this is over. Steve-O were absolutely wax lyrical, didn't he?
To the point where I was a little bit uncomfortable because I don't know how to deal with praise.
Well, the worrying thing was, he said, the show'll be really good as long as you don't change the format. And next episode, we'll be going to a two-hour Raw, so we were thinking about changing the format, so...
only of how we actually approach reviewing the shows, though. It's it'll still be the same, you know, opening and all our pisshead chatting. It'd just be slight tweaks our review of the shows, but the basic layout will still be the same.
Yeah, hopefully he won't be too upset when we do make a few tweaks. The Smack Attack podcast absolutely waxed lyrical about us, so very grateful for that. and Bang Bang Podcast had some loud and possibly slanderous accusations of impropriety, but it's all in good fun, so we won't have to hire the services of Clarence Mason.
I really want to hire him. This Monday morning war is going to be a lot of fun.
It really is. Andy slid into my DMs and said that you're stealing our gimmick talking about beer. And I said, I've been onto the legal team and we're absolutely fine because you've only got one guy who talks about decent beer and we've got two.
A clear and obvious distinction there.
Exactly. Exactly.
You've so basically talking... WCW Nitro'd them. That's what you've done. You've come along and done their gig, but better.
We've taken a couple of notes out of Nirvana and made it an entrance song.
So talking about beer, what's everyone drinking?
Max, are you on anything today or are you not bothering?
Yeah. I mean, as I said on the first episode I was on, I am a classy bird. None of your regular tat for me. So today I am drinking proper number 12 Irish whiskey. It has notes of vanilla and honey and a back flavour of toasted wood. It's a very smooth, easy sip. So, yeah, I'm drinking proper number 12.
I do like a nice whiskey, and I admire the way you were reading the bottle there.
It's definitely not in my eyesight right next to me.
I walk the dog for my granddad every night, and we tend to have a wee dram on an evening. And tonight he broke out the good stuff, so I had a 14-year-old Balvenie single malt.
Oh, nice!
Which was bloody lovely. He didn't realise it was that old though; otherwise, he wouldn't have opened it. But yeah, it was good. What are you drinking, Rob?
At the moment, I've got Even Sharks Need Water by Verdant Brewery. It's a 6.5% IPA, which I've given 3.75 to Untappd. And I've got a York Chocolate Stout by Rudgate. It's 5% for later on. And hopefully again, when the pandemic's over, we can get to Shamble Tavern and have some Rudgate at the tap or whatever equivalent that is.
That sounds good to me. I do want to get back to that Shambles Tavern. I've gone back to our old mates at Brass Castle, who I've still got to mention on Twitter that I'm actually name-dropping them constantly. I'll get to that. But I'm on their Sabra Mosaic Red IPA with seaweed, that Meet Me Underwater that I referenced a couple of weeks ago. I just fancied something that I've had before, something familiar. A bit weird and tasty, 6.5%, so there's a good reason I'll be slurring my words more than usual by the end of this. So yeah, cheers.
Cheers. Now is the time of the show where the listeners can sit back and be the virtual Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler playing on a phone while we'll be the virtual Reginald recommending a beer that you can drink while you're watching the show. So what would you recommend, Mags? Doesn't have to be a beer.
Whilst watching this show, Terps, seriously, or Bleach, maybe some Bleach. You need. I think that 6.5% shout that Dan's got seems good, because by the time you get to the end of this row, you'll be wondering why you weren't watching Nitro.
I mean, that's just giving away the review, but
that's normally my job.
What would you recommend, Dan?
I'm actually going to deviate. I wouldn't recommend a beer for this show. I'd recommend 17 Jaeger bombs, because you'll need the Red Bull to keep you awake.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
Belly bombs, then.
I'd be up for that. Nobody else, but I'd be up for it. I've gone for Thin Ice by Saddler's Ale. It's 4.5% pale ale, which I've given 2.25 to on Untappd, because this show emanates from the Ice Palace in Tampa, Florida. So there's a little tie-in there, but also because WWF was skating on Thin Ice, putting this episode out.
And you also probably gave this a 2.2 rating.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. We'll have to wait and see. And now it's time for Beth's Beer of the Week.
And Beth's Beer of the Week is Samuel Smith's Apricot Fruit Lager.
So Beth's gone with Sam Smith's Apricot Fruit Lager, 5.1%, which she's given a 5 to one Untappd.
That's generous. Apricots are shite.
Have you actually had any of the fruits Sam Smith's beers, Dan?
I have. I have. They're bloody delicious. But I just don't like apricots, so I hate that one. So like the wrestling, that is entirely subjective from me.
One thing that really disappointed me when I was looking this up on Untappd, this isn't one that's actually brewed in Tadcaster. This is brewed on license by Melbourne Brothers in Lincolnshire. So it's not even brewed at the Sam Smith's Brewery.
Scandalous.
Disgusting. How dare they?
Sad times. I'm almost as sad about that as I am about this episode of Raw.
See, we've been bagging on this already. The one that I watched accidentally was worse than this. I've had a double whammy of bullshit.
Excellent. So we're giving you a bit of an idea of where the quality of the shows are at the moment. But just to give you a little bit of a context of the ratings, we've mentioned before that Bruce Pritchard and Jim Cornette were in charge for 62 episodes, and that had sort of split into the trend of the ratings going up for the first 16, then down for the next 20, and then back up for the next 26. And there's actually a sort of point in time the WWF decide that they're going to have a change in direction, which is why that last 26 is sort of separated off from the others. And we've discussed previously how Vince Russo is sat at the back in the creative meetings, not really saying very much. Vince Russo is getting a bit fed up of being sat at the back, not saying very much. And he organises a meeting with his line manager, who's Linda McMahon, saying, is that all they think he's capable of? Do they not think he's capable of doing any more? So she arranges a meeting with Vince McMahon, and he starts screaming at him about not being grateful for his job, that sort of thing. And Vince Russo's just saying that all he wants to do is help, not cause a problem. Anyway, he thinks he's in a lot of trouble. But shortly thereafter, Raw gets its lowest rating to date of a 1.8 on the 14th of October, 96. And the next time there's a meeting, Vince McMahon walks in and slams a copy of the WWF Raw magazine from September, October down on the desk, and says that the shows need to be more like the magazine. So he's taken sort of Vince Russo's comments into account. And I actually did get a copy of the magazine, which I've just shown Mags and Dan, and sort of looked at some of the articles that were in it, just to sort of see how the direction had changed. So I thought it'd be interesting to sort of, if I just sort of explain some of the articles, and you might, you know, give some comments on it, see what you think. And especially, I don't know if, I presume you've read sort of the WWF magazine or whatever when it was out, that kind of thing. I think this is a bit different. So first article is an article where Russo's speculating that the Hart Foundation are going to get back together. And even though they're sort of at odds at the moment, some are faces, some are heels. This is in September, the September-October issue. The Hart Foundation actually don't get back together till March 97. So this isn't sort of even on the cards at the moment. Sort of speculation piece. We've then got comments on Hall and Nash in WCW and saying they're not part of an invasion angle, that kind of thing. So they're actually acknowledging the competition.
Wow.
That's so unexpected.
I mean, I probably read it. Okay, I used to get the magazines at the time. I probably did read it at the time. But, you know, looking in hindsight, it doesn't feel like something WWE would do today.
Yeah, I know that. I've seen a couple of interviews with Vince, and he said he was basically given free rein with the magazine for a long period until Vince McMahon finally started reading the copies and saying, where's he getting this information from? Who's been feeding him this? And then taking, like you said, taking those kind of like speculations and those acknowledging of the opposition into the booking meetings and actually coming out with what would eventually be some of the best programming that they did.
Yeah, I mean, the Hart Foundation, once that gets off and running with them being heels in America and faces everywhere else in the world, was some of the best storylines WWF have ever done.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one was interesting that he mentioned the relationship between Warrior and the WWF and mentioned that, as we'd said in the previous episode, that Warrior had had time off grieving his father. And there was sort of a tempestuous relationship between Warrior and WWF. And he actually says in it that both sides know this going into the relationship, but why do they do it? And it's because it's magic when it works. And mm-hmm. kind of have seen that in flash from the Warrior.
Yeah, and as we covered in the first episode, it was the highest rated of this partnership. So it shows that Warrior being involved with WWF did print money, whether he's wrestling and his character work was the same, that's another story, but he was money for the company.
Oh, definitely. And that fan response was something else, really, when Warrior was doing his promo. He's got an article about Brian Pillman coming in and being the new Roddy Piper. Again, it's kind of interesting that they're talking about people who've left, which WWF never do now.
Especially considering on this exact episode we're covering, Roddy Piper's in the main story on the opposing programming.
It's quite interesting because there's also a list of the greatest intercontinental champions of all time, and he's put Macho Man and Razor Ramon all in the list.
Wow.
That is pretty huge, isn't it? I mean, there's acknowledging the competition, and then there's putting them over, but it's doing so in a way that only acknowledges their time in the WWF. Mm-hmm. So I can see where it's coming from, absolutely. But yeah, that's just enormous, isn't it, really?
And the thing is, if you like trying to paper over history, you're never gonna you're always gonna kind of fall into the same trap of making the same mistakes. You can't avoid the fact that these were huge stars who carried that Intercontinental title and made it really relevant. So you can't just like not acknowledge them just because they don't work for the company anymore.
Yeah, you can't just peacock around and pretend it didn't happen.
Oh, man. I feel so bad for American fans. That peacock deal has turned into a right shower of shit.
Like I said on Twitter, I was just going to excited to see the wrestling in a lower range clothing store populated by elderly people.
There's just going to be massive chunks of that 97 to 2001 Raw that are just not there.
Yeah, and it's not like it's hard to just say, like they do on every other streaming service, this is of its time, don't represent today's values, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But to cut great swathes out is doing it a big disservice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So talking about things that perhaps wouldn't be seen in the modern product, there's Shawn Michaels' Playgirl shoot magazine. And it's quite a salacious article, actually. The lady who wrote the Playgirl article is quite explicit about how much she likes Shawn Michaels.
Was she called Vincella McMahon by any chance?
Possibly. Quite possibly. It could have been Vince McMahon. That's the one thing he did know. Another thing that I thought was quite brave, they acknowledge the lights going out at In Your House, Beware of Dog, and do, you know, quite a long article, really, on sort of what happened and what people missed at that event. Again, modern day WWE would probably try and sweep that under the carpet, but this was kind of a warts and all presentation.
Yeah, really kind of the genesis of reality, I suppose, like letting everyone peek behind the curtain almost.
It feels like if WWE produced its own dirt sheet, if that makes sense.
Where essentially, they're controlling that's it
and what the, yeah, that, like you said, Mags, they're pulling the curtain back just so far, but not too far to sort of ruin the whole illusion.
Yeah, and I think essentially that's what Vince Russo was going for. He wanted that kind of a warping that line of what you think is real and what you know is scripted.
There's a thing on the cover of the magazine that says, for the mature fan, and it actually does feel that they're not sort of insulting your intelligence, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And that will lead next year to Vince McMahon actually cutting that promo about not wanting to insult the fans' intelligence. Now they're having a change of direction. There's a Mark Marrow and Sable photo shoot.
Just Sable and then Mark, like, just with his head just in camera shot like that.
Photo. Mark Marrow photo bombing, yeah.
Mark Marrow was taking the photos.
An article I was really surprised about was the tragedy of the Texas tornado and the Von Erichs, talking about, you know, how each of them died. I mean, the only thing it kind of didn't mention was Kerry Von Erich's motorcycle accident. But aside from that, I was shocked to see this being a WWF product that was mentioning that.
That's very dark.
Well, and then there was an interview that Jim Ross had done with Jake the Snake Roberts, which is talking about Jake being born when his mum was 13, talking about him being addicted to cocaine, wrestling when he's on drugs and alcohol, that kind of thing. Absolutely warts and all.
That sounds brilliant. Like, yeah. I know it's morbid and a bit macabre.
You mean not the story?
The actual magazine.
Addicted to cocaine, that is brilliant.
No, you know what I mean? The actual magazine itself and the content of it sounds absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Really kind of like Dan said, just explained, Rob said, warts and all. Really like no pulling of any punches, just telling you exactly how it is.
Yeah. And I can kind of understand why Vince McMahon takes this magazine, slams it on the desk, and this is going to be the creative direction of the show, you know, well into the early 2000s.
Well, that's it. I mean, if that was the first ever edition of that magazine for your company that you'd read, and I can guarantee Vince read that cover to cover and he was enthralled by it, I bet he's like, wow, this has kept me interested for an hour reading this. This is what we need to be producing.
Yeah. I mean, I read it for doing this podcast, but literally it was ready to cover straight away, one sitting sort of thing. So I didn't get distracted by it, which shows, you know, how many magazines can do that.
Exactly.
So in terms of the show itself, as we've said before, it was taped at the Ice Palace in Tampa, Florida, in front of 2,925 fans. So a few more than we've been seeing recently in WWF. It was taped on the 16th of December, 96. It was matches 14, 15, 16, and 17 of a 17-match card. So we've seen in previous episodes how well that works out for them.
Hang on, did you say 16th?
It was taped on the 16th. And the episode
taped.
Did you think you'd watched a second wrong episode?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, I nearly had a heart attack.
He put himself through two 45-minute episodes that he didn't need to watch.
Oh, I knew this was going to be a car crash, from my part, but bloody hell.
It's not really fair on... And mind you, the last episode of WWF that we watched, I thought was really good. I really enjoyed it, that one we reviewed. And then the episode that Dan and I reviewed of Nitro last episode, I thought that was good. So maybe we're sort of paying the karma price for two good ones. So the show starts, it's straight into the show, we don't get an open, nothing like that at all. We've got Vince, JR and King on commentary, and Matt Marrow and Stable are on the way to the ring.
It's the right episode.
It's the right episode, Dan, you're happy about this.
In a repeat of the weeks before.
Vince McMahon tells Lawler to keep away from Stable after what he said to her last week, and that's probably advice that should apply to all women, really.
Just his laugh. That's just a mantra he should live by.
Matt Marrow actually got pyro, so they weren't completely trying to dig it.
He got better pyro than an AEW barbed wire deathmatch.
Everyone gets better pyro than an AEW.
that is true.
So Vince is saying that last week, Lawler lost a Milton Bradley Karate Fighters Championship match to Sable. Just to put it in perspective, this episode that we're reviewing today got 1.5, so it's even lower than that lowest episode that we discussed, despite them trying to make some of these creative changes. That episode with the Karate Fighters match got 2.3, so it was almost 50% higher rated for a Karate Fighters match.
I watched that. That was the one I watched. It was fucking dog shit.
I went back and watched that segment, and I know I'm spoiling the rest of the review. If that Karate Fighters match had been on this show, I'd be giving it match of the night.
Maybe that's why they lost so many viewers, that they'd advertised Milton Bradley Karate Fighters so much that people went out and bought it and did their own version of Raw, sat at home.
So backyard Milton Bradley Karate Fighters.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we actually get a video of what happened last week in the match. And afterwards, Triple H attacks Mark Marrow, and then Goldust comes and attacks Triple H. The actual feud between Mark Marrow and Triple H was in the last episode that we all reviewed together, which in sort of chronological terms was 38 weeks previous on Raw. So it's been a fair old build-up.
It's certainly long-term booking, and later on in the show when we get to it, there's some more long-term booking with Honky Tonk on commentary.
Riz. And so we go into an Intercontinental Championship match. It's Mark Marrow versus the Intercontinental Champion at Triple H, but there's no championship advantage in the match. And we get Goldust and Marlena doing a Shield entrance through the crowd and go and sit down. And the crowd seemed more interested in Goldust and Marlena than anything else, possibly even on the show.
Yeah. Especially at the end of the match, the whole of the front row was looking to Goldust and Marlena and beckoning them to come to the ring.
This match did have moment of the night, though, just the moment of the whole show, and that was Jerry Lawler getting chased off by Mark Merrow. What a gift. What an absolute gift.
I mean, to be fair to this match, and there's no way I'd say that this show had any good wrestling, but at least Triple H and Mark Merrow had a little bit of chemistry in the ring. You could tell that they were two decent wrestlers. It just they didn't give us a decent match, but at least there was something there to enjoy.
It was just at this time of his career, just every time we've seen him on this show, Triple H, whenever he gets on the offense, just seems to suck the life out of the room. It's just so... There's methodical, and then there's just slow and dull.
Yeah.
And that's what he seems to bring at the minute, unless he's shithousing.
Yeah, I did put about the crowd noise being piped in during this match for Triple H. It was very obvious. Halfway through the match, there's a break, and it goes to an advert for the WWF Full Metal album. And the plus of this advert is that it's got Freddie Blassie in. The minus of this advert is that given that we're trying to make this a more mature product and we know the direction we want to take it in, you've got little children cosplaying as wrestlers.
Which in 2021's ours is very creepy. I mean, the first one they dresses up as is a topless Shawn Michaels. And then the last one, he dresses up as Goldust, which are two really kind of weird costumes to bookend a little cosplay session. Yeah, I was very perturbed by this little advert.
It was worrying.
Yeah.
Maybe this is one of the things that's going to get removed when Peacock goes.
It's one of the few things I'd encourage them to take out, because this was as creepy as a Seven vignette.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
We had a Twitter conversation about Seven vignettes.
Yeah. I did not know that was Dustin's idea. How dare he shit on it on the show when it was his idea? Brutal.
Well, I mean, it could have been his idea, and then he's sort of thinking, well, if I bring it in and it's crap enough, I can get rid of it. But
yeah.
Although, interestingly enough, I think we actually end up hitting, when we get to Sullivan and Taylor's lowest episode in WCW, that has the first vignette for it, so we'll be able to...
I am not surprised.
I can't wait to rip that apart.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it had 5 million viewers, then that hit, and then it had less than 1 million left. Just everybody turned over.
So, we've probably already given what we think's our review of the match. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, like I said, I thought there was some decent wrestling in it. It's just like you both have said, Triple H just hasn't got that character worked down. He is a charisma vacuum, I suppose. Mark Miro really does try his best to kind of bring some energy into the match. I was never a huge fan of this wild man gimmick, but obviously with Sable being at ringside, you can't really fault it. But I thought the intrigue was with Goldust and Marlena in the crowd. That's what made this for me, knowing it was like a kind of a three-way story. And then when Triple H gets basically run off by Goldust at the end, it made me want to find out what happens next. I mean, obviously, I know what happens next, but the match itself, it was so middle of the road for me.
Yeah, same. It says a lot that the thing that sticks out most in this match is Merrow chasing Lawler off, mm-hmm. and the fact that they kept that gold spotlight on Goldust and Marlena, and just how excited the fans were to see Goldust. Because this is it's come sort of 180 for Goldust across the episodes we've reviewed.
Yeah.
He came in, it was his TV debut. He was a heel, but not a lot of people really gave much of a shit. But now here he is, months later, and they want him to kick the crap out of Triple H. It was, I think that was sort of typified by the end of the match, like you alluded to, Mags. when there was people on the front row turning around, beckoning him down.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of the match, Mark Marrow goes to attack Triple H, but he gets restrained by the staff from the back. It's Gerald Briscoe and the referees. So the biggest insult of all on this match is the first one we reviewed, when it's not Rene Goulet that's piling out from the back.
Wow.
Heartbreaking.
No wonder it got such low ratings.
That just heck gone. Alone would have drawn another million.
Yeah. I mean, that's a potential mullet of the night winner.
Although we're changing that to the Rene Goulet haircut of the night. One.
The memorial, even though he's still very much alive.
The Rene Goulet Living Memorial Award.
Although the backlogs that we have with this episode, maybe you won't be. But we're fingers
crossed. Oh, my God. Wishing Rene Goulet death.
What's worse, wishing Rene Goulet death or wishing the entire wrestling Twitter community was maimed?
I think they're both on a par.
So Triple H cuts the promo, and he's saying that the Royal Rumble is going to show Goldust what it's like to be in the ring with a real man, and then Marlena will find out what it's like to be with a real man. So Triple H perhaps doesn't understand what he actually gets at the pay window at this stage in his career.
Yeah, it's such a creepy promo. And then you fast forward a few years and he's doing the same thing with Kane and Katie Vick. He clearly did not learn any kind of like etiquette towards women. I mean, at the time, it probably worked as a promo, but right now, yeah, it was cringy. Very, very cringy.
Behaving like a typical blue blood. Fucking horrible, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe we can help Peacock and just send him a list of everything that we see as we go in.
Just all the terrible things we've ever seen in WWF, but and also WCW programming. I mean, there's going to be no ECW left at all on that Peacock deal. Like, none.
No, there ain't. Jesus Christ.
Sad.
Oh, well, we can record it off the network and sell it on to them, so...
I mean, we're all right for now in the UK. So any Americans, you might want to think about getting a VPN and getting the UK version of the network.
No, don't get a VPN. What we need to do is bring back tape trading.
Oh, yeah.
Just record it off the network and then send it overseas.
Yeah. Like rare. Put it on eBay as rare because you can't get it in the States anymore. Make an absolute fortune.
We've got a business plan here, boys.
Yeah, we have.
If only they used the same region for tapes as we did.
Don't shit on my dreams.
We can sell them a PAL video player as well.
Yes, there we go, Mads. I like that kind of thinking. You're offering solutions, not problems.
Correct.
So we get a video package from the previous week. It's Billy Gunn versus Bart Gunn. And Vince is saying that Billy Gunn has partial temporary paralysis from hitting his neck on the rope after a stun gun. Billy's wife, Tina, runs into the ring, and we get a voiceover from Bart Gunn from an interview on Livewire where he's saying it was an accident and he feels horrible about it, but Billy and Tina blame him.
To give him credit, that was actually a really well-done injury angle. If I remember rightly, that was the main event of the show. I think. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Of the previous show?
Of the previous show, yeah. That injury angle, I'm pretty sure, was the main event.
By accident.
Yeah, and it was that, but that was the high point of the show where I'm sort of left there thinking, is he actually injured?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I thought that the way that they did this injury angle was really well done. I think there should be more stuff like this where it shows that wrestling is not like acrobatics and it's not like two partners dancing that you can get hurt. And I thought the way that they did this, the way Billy sold it, the way Bart sold being worried, yeah, I thought it was a really well-done angle.
It is such an effective tool. Rob, I don't know if you were at this Southside show with us, but it was one where Gabriel Kidd, who was heel at the time, he looked as though he had an injury mid-match. And it went on just long enough for you to think, I don't know, he really actually is... Really, actually, he's knackered. He looked genuinely devastated. His face was really, just really, really selling. He was on the verge of tears. And he's just really laboredly making his way to the back. And then just as he hits the curtain, he turns around, boom, straight in to jump someone, and it was just the moment where we, I think we all just absolutely hated him even more. We're just starting to feel sorry for him. And just, you bastard.
That's top quality shithousing.
He's really a really is. Good Gabriel Kidd. Really good heel. I mean, he did some great stuff in Southside and WCPW.
And he's killing it in New Japan. Absolutely killing it.
So then we get Sonny coming to the ring, and she's in a Santa hat.
Obviously. Just a Santa hat, folks. Nothing else. Just a Santa hat.
She was quite reserved in what she was wearing for Sonny at this point.
Yeah, it was classy. It was actually classy for her.
And the crowd actually seemed interested in Sonny being there, which is probably the only thing they were interested in.
Vincent McMahon was very interested.
No, he wasn't, though, was he? It was so fast. Even when he's there just going, wow, look at Sonny. It's like,
do you think? I mean, he stood up, he held his hand out for her, and the way she was sat next to him, and he was, I felt like he was playing pocket billiards underneath the table for part of the show.
I never got that. It's not like he had Shawn Michaels sat next to him.
That is true. I mean, Jerry Lawler wasn't even under the table. He was playing pocket billiards clean out on the table.
But no, everything was so fast. It was so robotic. It was, Cena does the Lance Catamaran thing, which I'm sure is inspired by Vince, but this was Vince at his most wooden, not in that way.
I thought Vince was absolutely loving it, especially when they were sort of in the middle of commentary. And there was one thing where Sonny was sort of flirting with Vince, and JR was rolling his eyes next to them.
JR was fuming. You could well tell. He's like, by God, Sonny, why don't you flirt with me?
Sonny played this to perfection in this match, though. Mm-hmm. She was fantastic.
But before that, we go to the break, and we get an advert, and it's Psycho City's coming to town. And we've got a choir singing it to the famous Christmas song, and Freddie Blass is the conductor.
This was the best advert for me. I absolutely loved it. I'd happily have sung along if I knew the words. It was brilliant.
I went to a PCW show once, and Ryback was on the show, and it was near Christmas, and the crowd was chanting, "Feed the Ryback, let him know it's Christmas time."
I can guarantee you that was started by the Ogdens.
I didn't see them at the show, although it was literally like sardines in the venue, so they may well have been there. But.
Did you hear a thunderous clap at any point, or just smell Jeff farting?
The only thing you'd be able to do was smell, because you wouldn't have been able to get your arms far enough apart to clap. And so we go into the match, and it's Rocky Maivia versus Salvadori Sincere with Jim Cornette. And JR's saying Cornette's trying very hard to sign Rocky Maivia.
This was a rematch from the free-for-all from the previous In Your House. And that's it. That's all the knowledge of it I had. What I did know, I mean, knowing the storylines that go on after this, we've got Rocky Maivia who's struggling to get over with this gimmick. And then you've got Salvatore Sincere, I think later on this year, he's actually stripped of the Salvatore Sincere gimmick because he gets called out on it by Mark Miro when he's Salvatore's helping Sable a few times. And Mark gets involved and he goes, "You're not even Italian. You're called Tom Brandy." I think it was Tom Brandy. Yeah. And then it just goes to show the kind of duopoly of these two wrestlers' careers, because Rocky changed his gimmick and became one of the biggest stars in wrestling history, and Salvatore Sincere changed gimmick, had about three more matches in the company, and was quickly shipped off.
Yeah, there seems to be people like that WWF, WWE, you know, they'll do things like they'll break up heavy machinery, and then Tucker's just either chasing the 24/7 title for a couple of weeks, and then, you know, you never see him again.
But we still have Otis, so that's fine.
We do. It's an inspiration.
That went down like a fart in church, that did.
Well, we didn't give you as much abuse as those guys on the front row were giving Jim Cornette, which I thought was great. There was just about four guys just giving him the dog's abuse and chanting at him, and the rest of the crowd were just sat on their hands.
The good thing about Cornette at this time, though, is he could take it, and he knew how to draw that heat. Cornette now any the slightest bit of heat on him, and then he's going off on a mad Twitter rant and then blocking people. So he's not aged well, I don't think, poor Cornette.
That sounds like a personal anecdote there, Mags.
No, I mean, he's not blocked me. I don't think I've ever followed him, but he does get very block happy.
Although we've mentioned on previous shows that in many of the episodes, he was one of the absolute highlights. He's had some brilliant promos. I mean, we thought he's been, you know, really good in that role. Obviously, he's jointly in charge of creative at this stage. And just to sort of give a bit of the backstage insight into it at this time, however sort of much Cornette believed he was right about his opinions today, it was probably the same in this era. Mm-hmm. So I think those creative meetings were quite tough, that they'd want to do something and Jim Cornette would just go round in circles that it should be done his way.
Yeah, but back then, I suppose, it worked because he had a lot of success, whereas now his success is from 20, 30 years ago. So it's almost like he doesn't understand the current product and what fans actually want, and he's just sticking to, like, clasping to old glories.
Yeah, I think he's definitely got a gimmick. I think he knows who his fan base are, and I think mm-hmm. they want to be like that, and he kind of plays that character. But yeah, it doesn't look good to everybody else. So Sonny's there on commentary saying that she's been known to corrupt young men before, and in one of the more tasteless episode parts of the show, Vince turns to JR and says he has a funny look on his face, which...
Oh, God, he did.
Obviously, his bell's paused. So.
I think JR came back from it quite well, though. He sort of rode with it and just said, like, it's not my fault, he just misread my face. It happens quite a lot.
Just the stick that they give JR is absolutely brutal, and he sat there and took it. I feel for the guy.
Yeah, especially considering his commentary throughout this show was one of the highlights. Mm-hmm. He actually got the story points across. Well, he did the play-by-play. He stopped Vince from going off on his insane rants and tangents. He tied it all together really, really well. And it was the same in the week before, the episode I accidentally watched. Except it was even harder for him because he had Vince and Jerry Lawler there. So it must have been like herding cats. But he still kept everything going and just added a great new dimension to it than what we've seen previously.
Yeah.
He did manage to get a little dig in this match, saying that he used to live in Georgia and there's a lot of people in Georgia without ethics. Obviously referring to WCW's hierarchy.
Oof.
Yeah, that was quite like that. But throughout it all, I thought, like, commentary-wise, Sonny really stood out. There was, you know, all the innuendo stuff was quite clever, and she'd, like, you know, she'd drop an innuendo and then she'd be like, well, no, what do you think I meant?
Yeah, yeah. And she also got across what she needed to get across, that she was there keeping an eye on Rocky with aims to sign him as a manager, that she was going to be on the MTV show. Was it singled out that she was going on? So she got across the bullet points that she needed to get across.
Mm. And she signed off with a great line. It was something like about talking to Santa, and she said, I'll admit I've been a bad girl, but what Sonny wants, Sonny gets, and Sonny wants Rocky Maivia.
Mm-hmm. I thought she was one of the highlights of the match, definitely. What do you think to the match in general?
I mean, this was, what, Rocky, less than a year into his wrestling career, and he looked as good as someone who's been in the company 5-10 years. He looked fresh. He looked like he knew how to sell. He was playing up to the crowd. I thought he was the highlight of the match. I mean, Salvatore Sincere, he was, let's get it right, he was a jobber. He was absolutely a jobber. But the match still, it didn't work for me because it's not the Rocky that we know that we're going to get. It's the Rocky that everybody hated. I mean, you even heard on the fans booing Rocky and giving him grief. So whilst the match didn't work as a match for me, I you can see the glimpse of what kind of wrestler Rocky's going to be in the future.
Yeah, the flashes were there. It was another match that was... It was just sort of there. There was nothing horrendously, offensively bad about it. It was just yet another, but the second match in a row where it's just, okay, this is definitely a wrestling match. This is it's dry toast. It's, you know, it's room temperature water. It will sustain you, but it won't thrill you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I put at the end of the match, the crowd went mild. I thought it was a lackluster match. And it was upsetting that even Cornette was subdued, because, you know, Cornette's been brilliant. Even if with some of the physical sort of comedy or whatever he does in matches previously, but we didn't even get that.
He's probably fuming that he knows his tenure as a booker is coming to an end.
I was just going to say that it's the second match in a row where we've had a manager and they've been a complete non-entity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To be fair, Cornette will go on and book with Russo after this period.
Piss on my chips, won't you, there, Rob? Cheers for that.
I don't want people to skip the next two episodes. Stay tuned. Jim Cornette's still confident he can turn it around.
It's in the last chance saloon.
So then we get WWF superfans Adam and George, and they're in the Alamo Dome 3 weeks early because they're that excited for the Royal Rumble. And they think they've found the way into the main auditorium to find the way to the ring, although why it'd be there 3 weeks early, who knows. But they found the way into the toilets.
It's funny because toilets.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to dissect this. Why would they be there 3 weeks early?
I mean, surely 3 weeks later they'd be dead because they'd have no food or water. They're there for 3 whole weeks. How long can you last without sustenance? Yeah, I didn't get the point of it. I mean, there's a lot easier and more interesting ways to harp the fact that you've got Royal Rumble coming up in 3 weeks. This did not work.
It just goes back to what I've said before about the contrast between the early 90s cheese and bullshit and the Attitude Era incoming. It's the scales are tipping slowly towards Attitude Era, as we've seen in bits and pieces, but stuff like this is just what's weighing it down.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see flashes of both eras, but this was firmly sat in that old kind of new generation era, and it stuck out like a sore thumb that it did not work.
It didn't. Then we've got Vince in the ring, and he's introducing the WWF champion, Psycho Sid. And the crowd seem up for Sid.
Mm-hmm. Oh. He was fist bumping people. I mean, this was a guy who was meant to be essentially a heel. And yeah, he was fist bumping everyone. I thought he looked so good as a champion. As a wrestler, not the best, but as a physical specimen, he fitted what you would call a WWF champion.
Absolutely, yeah. He was ridiculous. It was just the sheer size of him, which he goes on to mention quite a lot. the sheer size of him, the physique, the scary. He was a scary looking motherfucker. Mm-hmm. It was terrifying, imposing. Yeah, everything you want from a champion for a look.
And they played his entrance music all the way through the interview, and it's
that was
kind
shit.
Well, yeah, but I kind of got what they were going for. They were trying to say, well, this is sort of creepy and intense, and Sid's a bit that way. But we did get the bonus that Sid is 6'9" and 300 pounds today, and tomorrow he'll be 6'9" and 300 pounds, and the day after, and the day after. It felt like one of those QVC adverts where they're measuring some jewellery or something and saying it's a permanent measurement that'll never change, you know?
It is really nice to know that he's not shrinking, though, or getting any bigger. He's just gonna maintain, and he'll be all right.
He's not, yeah. He's not piling on the timber. He'll definitely be 300-ish pounds when it gets to the Royal Rumble. So don't you panic.
I do find it funny with wrestlers' weights, though, because, you know, obviously, like, boxers will cut weight for weigh-ins and that kind of thing. But wrestlers, we're supposed to believe they just stay the same weight for their entire career. They just have the weight that they build at. And there's never any fluctuations. You'd think, you know, they'd throw a bit of difference in, but they can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, AEW tried doing it a couple of times with some of the pay-per-views where they did, like, weigh-ins and stuff like that, specifically for Cody matches, obviously. But, yeah, it's weird because you see a guy who claims he's, like, 210 pounds and you think, No way. You are nowhere near 210 pounds. More like 310, mate. Keep off the kebabs.
I was. I finally finished reading that the wrestling book by Simon. What was his name? Simon Garfield. I think his name was. Yeah, I finally finished it, and he was talking about a DVD collection that got released, like Best of World of Sport. And he said one of the highlights is watching two giant haystacks matches back to back and watching him gain 9 stone within 10 minutes.
Although probably haystacks would have gained 9 stone.
No, he legitimately had, but they had the matches almost back to back, obviously years apart, but then he'd gone from 31 stone to 40.
Wow. Jesus.
Actually, in that WWF magazine, there's an article where he's talking about the NWO and Hall and Nash, but he's also sort of ripping the Dungeon of Doom, and he mentions Loch Ness, who was Giant Haystacks. So we've got Giant Haystacks reference at this point in.
Look at that. The levels on this show.
So what did you think of Sid's promo in general?
I thought it was really good. It made you interested in him as a character. He's never been someone who can give you a long, meaningful diatribe, but he said what he needed to say. Did he call himself the super predator of the WWF? Said that he'd beaten two of the best wrestlers that they've ever been. Yeah, I thought it was a really good promo. Well worked, and Sid looked every inch the part.
It was kind of like we've called him before on that 90s wrestling podcast, the 80s style cocaine promo. It was like a throwback to that, but in a good way. And what he was actually saying was decent. Mm-hmm. Even the times when he shouted, it was almost, it was almost warranted. It got the point across. The only thing that almost ruined it for me was the music playing over the top of it. Now, yeah. Fair enough, trying for something new, points for that. But the music went so loud at some points. Mm-hmm. I couldn't actually hear what Sid was saying, and it was just irritating. So I'm a big horror movie fan, you know, so the 80s slasher films like Friday the 13th, Halloween, all of them. And the music was so blatantly ripped off off those movies. I'm there thinking there's an homage, and then there's been derivative. And I don't need it over the top while Sid's talking. And it just dragged the whole thing down for me, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, if they'd have got that balance right, I think, like you both have said, it would have added something. But when he started talking, it was so loud, and then it faded down a little bit, and you thought, oh, well, we're getting there now. It's just like fading in and out an intro. But then it sort of getting, like I said, it's sort of picking back up, and you're thinking, no, it's grinding now a little bit. But if they'd have found that in the background that you knew was there, I think it would have worked perfectly. But what Sid said and the character he was getting across, I thought he did well there.
I kind of like the Jake the Snake element of parts of it being just talking softly.
Mm-hmm. But Sid did that really well all the way throughout his career. When he talked really quiet, you listen more because he is such a scary looking guy. And then when he flattens out his top lip and it goes right up against his teeth, he looks more aggressive and angry than he does if he's shouting at 100 decibels.
Yeah. So we've maybe had mixed responses to that, but I thought it was all right. And next we get an advert for Shotgun Saturday Night, which is going to start airing within the next 2 weeks. And they've used the old Raw Riot intro footage. So it was nice to see that.
I wasn't paying attention at that point. I was making notes on something else.
Just put it down. We love that. That entrance.
And I've actually wrote my notes for the start of the show. Where's my Riot?
And you missed it, yeah? It was
halfway through the show.
Yeah, what a dickhead.
Been transferred to Shotgun Saturday Night.
Bastards.
But don't worry, Dan, it's not all sad news, because Forbidden Doors open again.
Hey!
Although it feels like one of those rotating doors in WWF.
Yeah, just AAA wrestlers trapped in it going around and around and around and around.
I think they sort of brought them in for the Royal Rumble, because it was going to be in San Antonio, and they were figuring that kind of near Mexico, so maybe people will be interested in. So we get Prero, who's the AAA champion of champions at the time. And we get Cybernetico, who's going to be a three-time AAA champion of champions by the end of his career. And there versus the new rockers of Marty Jannetty and Leif Cassidy.
Are you sure it wasn't Scott DeMar?
Yeah, I think it was Boz Mahoney.
All right, cool.
The new rockers. These were a skid mark on the underpants of tag team wrestling, weren't they?
It was the knockoff DX gear for me. Yeah. Before DX was even a thing.
Such a terrible tag team.
I mean, the rockers had been, as James always says on that 90s wrestling podcast, they'd been like the ultimate jobbers. And these are the jobbers of the jobbers.
This is taking the biggest jobber from a jobber tag team and adding another jobber.
It was actually jobber,
just jobbies left, right, and centre.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's taking that pin me, pay me thing. So,
yeah, absolutely.
But at least we get Mil Máscaras on Spanish commentary. Not that we really get the Spanish commentary. Jim Ross is trying to put over that this brand of mat-based wrestling is the proper Mexican wrestling, i.e. not the Lucha Libre we're seeing in WCW at the moment.
Wow. So if you want to know real Mexican wrestling, watch this boring, terrible crap that we've got on. Don't mind Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio on the other channel. Watch this terrible, terrible mess of a match instead. Viva la raza.
I might have been bullshitting, but at least he gave it his all.
He tried, bless him. But, you know, he's basically implying that WCW had brought in all these AAA wrestlers from Mexico and got them to fake a style of wrestling.
At least he gave some decent info on who the luchadors actually were. I can't remember what the info was, and I couldn't be bothered writing it down because I had about 20 minutes before recording at this point. But he gave a decent info dump during the match.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent they were a little bit bought into, you know, trying to put over this collaboration for the Royal Rumble. And obviously, it's a big arena they're going to try and run the Rumble in. So they're going to want to be trying to get as wide a fan base as possible. So it probably is a good idea to try and appeal and maybe they can get some people from Mexico to come to the show.
I mean, I agree with that. They definitely, the appeal is there for Mexican wrestling, just Lucha Libre Mexican wrestling, like high-flying, exciting, fast-paced wrestling, not typical WWE rest hold, but in masks.
Yeah. They were great masks.
They got the absolute,
they were gorgeous masks.
They got the absolute best luchadors they could get for the money.
3 pesos.
Prero does a big splash off the top rope on Leif Cassidy. It's basically a squash match that I didn't think the crowd were particularly interested in. You guys have any thoughts on the match?
Yeah, I mean, this was just less than 5 minutes. It felt like it dragged. It was a hard watch. Even compared to some of the matches that we've watched on this show, I mean, this is not going to go down as a Raw with matches that are must-see quality, but of all of them, this was probably the least see match of the lot. It was just woeful. I hated it, as you can tell.
That's strong feelings for something that barely registered with me. Again, it's a thing for the show. It's another match that it was just there. I didn't. Maybe it's because of the sort of time restraints I was under. But it just happened. There was some half decent shithousery in it. There was nowhere near as much high flying as I thought there'd be. I quite like the fact that they've got the AAA guys in and they're at least half heartedly attempting this crossover and to bring in something new and a couple of guys who are at least colourful and like we've never seen before. There's a point or two to be had there, but it was just bland again.
Yeah. And for the third match in a row, the commentary is more interesting than what's happening in the ring. The stuff with JR and Vince, the interview at the end with Mil Máscaras, I was more intrigued by that than I was the 5 minutes of wrestling that we watched.
Yeah, as you say, next segment, we get Jim Ross with Mil Máscaras. Mil Máscaras is saying the Royal Rumble would be the best match of his life.
Yeah. That, then you've had a crap career then, Mil Máscaras, because that you were a bit part in that Royal Rumble, sir.
Although I guess that's what the Royal Rumble's about. You get 30 guys out there all saying that they're going to win, and you absolutely know that some of them are going to just be over the rope within a minute, sort of thing.
Yeah, at least 29 of them are talking absolutely out of their arse. Yeah.
So then we get the Starburst Fruit Twist presents the Royal Rumble. Can we still buy Starburst Fruit Twists? Stop making them now.
I've never heard of them.
No, I don't think I've ever had one.
I'm just annoyed I want Opal Fruit.
Well, I heard this and thought, I used to love Starburst Fruit Twists. But, yeah, I haven't seen them in at least 15 years.
At least they were sponsored by milk.
Well, and they've not tied it in. So we were talking about the Skittles sponsorship in WCW in the last episode and how they'd sort of tied in sort of the branding and sort of the wording sort of played together. But, yeah, they've not bothered here. They've just stuck Starburst Fruit Twists in front.
It looks like they stopped making Starburst Fruit Twists in 2012.
Yeah, there you go. Sad times. I did like that.
Rob just died a little inside.
it just really hurt his feelings then.
I can't have liked him that much if I've only just noticed they've stopped making them.
Yeah, 9 years on.
It's like Dan with his film reviews.
how long was it? Had Con Air been out before I finally watched it?
Oh, it was a good 25 years before you were live tweeting it.
Yeah. So what happens when I get bored?
So then we get a voiceover from Vince, and he's saying who's going to be in the Royal Rumble. There's going to be Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Flash Funk, The Bulldog, Ahmed Johnson, and The Undertaker.
All the big names.
And once again, Vince goes completely robotic when he's saying the word Funkadelic. It just felt so unnatural. It was just... It made like the hair on me, just made the hair just like, ugh, like cringe, just, ugh.
Yeah, it wasn't great. And then we get the Honky Tonk Man making his return, and the crowd go mild yet again.
He's a fucking prick, good. It was more than he deserved.
He joins commentary. And we get Fake Razor, and he gets pyro. Well, I think it's probably we should talk about Fake Razor, and, well, obviously, Diesel. So they debuted in September 96 with Jim Ross, who's kind of doing a bit of a heel turn, but I guess that's kind of been forgotten already by this point.
Because it did not work. It shat the bed.
It did. And one of the things with sort of this show, we're looking at the different creative periods and kind of we're saying that these people are kind of responsible, the writers are kind of responsible for what's going on. Now, Bruce Pritchard claims that it was actually Paul Heyman's idea to have a Fake Razor Ramon. He says he rang him up, well, this is while Paul Heyman's still in ECW, obviously, saying that WWF should sign Rick Bognar because he could do a great impersonation of Scott Hall. So Bruce Pritchard's trying to say that this idea and the reason that they ran with it was because Paul Heyman told them to.
Hey, Rob, you know what you should do? You should take a shit in your bed. That's what you should do. But don't blame me when you've shit in your bed.
Yeah. I mean, he, aside from having greasy hair, there was nothing at all about Rick Bognar that looks like Scott Hall. It looked like Scott Hall if he'd, like, eaten another Scott Hall.
He looked like Scott Hall in Madame Tussauds on a hot day.
Like a melted candle of a Scott Hall.
But, and the sad thing is, he looked better as Razor Ramon than Glenn Jacobs did as Diesel. Because Kevin Nash is 7 foot tall. Kevin Nash is what I'd describe as annoyingly handsome. Mm-hmm. Even now, he's a good-looking bloke. And he's got that swagger about him and all that. And, you know, I'm a big Kane fan. I like Glenn Jacobs' work. But he's not a handsome man.
No, he looks like someone's punched a watermelon repeatedly.
Harsh but fair.
And when he tries to, when Glenn Jacobs tries to smile as Diesel, it's it's not a good look. It looks like a pumpkin, you know, like a carved out Halloween pumpkin.
Oh, I can't believe you're disrespecting Glenn Jacobs, the man who would be the man who would become Kane. The week he gets inducted into the Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame induction that means more to me, damn it, than any other. Oh, you're lucky you're not talking that way about Kane and it's just fake Diesel.
I mean, to be fair, when he was told about it on the bump, I felt so heartwarming for him. You could see it meant an absolute, just the world to him to be in the WWF Hall of Fame. Yeah, it could have happened to a nicer person.
It was a great moment. I absolutely loved watching that. Yeah. Saw it on Twitter and I was like, yes, well deserved.
Yeah, get in.
Anyway.
But he was a horrible Diesel.
Yes, he was a shit Diesel.
He was a shit dentist. He was a shit Diesel. The only thing he was good at is being a burned brother of Undertaker. And he rode that gimmick in just for the next 30 years.
And carried SmackDown through 2010.
He absolutely did.
And should have won the 2001 Royal Rumble.
So, to answer the question...
anyway...
Do you think it's fair to blame Paul Heyman, or are we saying that because Bruce Pritchard's the one with the pen in his hand, just because someone else gave him the idea?
Did you know that Kane also had tag title reigns with about 7 different partners? I finally broken Rob a little bit.
And don't forget his one-day reign as a WWF champion.
What a day. What a day. Mm-hmm. I was 8 or 9 years old. The sun shone brightly that day. It was magnificent. And yes, you don't blame Paul Heyman at all for that.
No, it was definitely Bruce Pritchard's fault.
And if you want to hear the story of Kane winning the title for one day, you can listen to a recent episode of Badlands.
Yes, you can. In the archives at thechairshot.com.
It won't be that recent when this comes out. Will it? Yeah.
And it certainly won't be recent compared to when we recorded. This will make it, what, about a 3-4 month gap?
Yeah. So then the next match is actually sponsored by Jackie Tan's First Strike. And First Strike had a bit part for future wrestler Nathan Jones. So a little bit of a tie-in.
Not his last acting appearance, Nathan Jones. He was also in Mad Max Fury Road.
And The Condemned.
But they didn't sponsor this match. So.
No, but you know who did sponsor this match? The Army. not any particular regiment or any particular section, just Army. It's the milk moment of this show. And it, to be honest, this might actually be the best part of the show. Army.
You can join the Army and be all you can be. And it's interesting, though, because if you look at the adverts that we've got for the Navy in this country, it starts out with a guy and it's saying, if you can repair a skateboard, you can repair a bike. And if you can repair a bike, you can repair a Mark 9 destroyer.
There's just a massive like difficulty curve there.
It's all just inner tubes, mate. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me with the Royal Navy if it was. it's a sharp curve, but it says something. So maybe it wasn't the milk moment, because I think that's a little bit more realistic than our adverts. So the crowd are on the feet. They're not rushing off to the recruitment office. They're on the feet for Bret Hart. And Vince and JR are talking about Bret Hart losing to Sid at In Your House due to Shawn Michaels. But he's saying they'll both be in Chicago on Tuesday, so this Tuesday in Chicago. They actually end up at the house show tagging, so it ends up being Austin and Vader versus Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. And then we get into the match between Bret Hart and Fake Razor. We've got Honky Tonk on commentary, is looking for someone that could do everything that he could do.
Yes, and that was the long-term booking I alluded to earlier in the show. That actually culminates in the formation of the New Age Outlaws, because Honky Tonk pits Jesse, who had come away from Jeff Jarrett, against Billy Gunn, for someone to basically fill his role I think Billy Gunn ends up beating Jesse James and becoming like the prodigy of Honky Tonk, and then goes on a massive losing streak. And then he ends up basically siding with Jesse James, and they turn on Honky Tonk. And then not long after that, they form the New Age Outlaws and basically rewrite wrestling tag team history.
Honky Tonk's still a prick. And I'm gonna explain that a little bit.
Best intercontinental champion of all of the times, Dan.
Is he fuck me?
I don't think he nails it down enough how important of an intercontinental champion he actually was.
But when Honky Tonk says about do all the things I can do, my mind just flashbacks to, I don't know if either of you guys ever used to listen to Roddy Piper's podcast. And it was on there that Piper was saying about how he'd recently got sober back in the day, and he was at one of either the Hall of Fame or just a reunion thing. And Honky Tonk was the only one in there who was spent the whole evening plonking whiskey down in front of him, trying to get him to drink, and just absolutely get to fuck for that.
Wow.
I didn't like him anyway, but I've despised him ever since I heard that.
On Why We Watch, I spoke with a wrestler called One Man Crew, and he had an interesting Honky Tonk story. He was wrestling in Japan, and he went into a room where the wrestlers were, and Honky Tonk was there, and all he was doing was looking to score weed off someone. Anyway, he ends up having a fairly decent wrestling match with Honky Tonk, but yeah, he just said the only thing he was interested in was getting stoned.
If Stone is a bad name, the prick.
Saying that, another stoner in the WWF Hall of Fame this week with RVD.
Oh, has that been announced?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Oh, wow. First he gets on that 90s wrestling podcast, and that leads to being in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
James has got the Midas touch.
He's a kingmaker. He's our James.
So going back to the match, there's a brilliant Easter egg in here in commentary. JR asks if he's going to get a Christmas bonus. And I don't...
And Vince is like...
The shock. Vince McMahon's just like, you must have lost your mind. Proper Ebenezer Scrooge. But I don't think that was an act.
I wonder if that would JR just chanting his arm, thinking, if I ask him publicly, he might say yeah, but he's still got shot down.
One thing we say about the commentary on this show, it's been the highlight, really, throughout all the matches. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just saying this because it's Honky Tonk and I can't stick him, but how loud and overbearing was he?
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It was like, again, it was like 80s cocaine shouty promo every time he talked. It was just a pain in the ass.
Yeah, but I suppose this is someone who was still living that late 80s, early 90s character, and he was still trying to be that person. He definitely did not change with the wrestling times. And that's what they built his career on, being loud and obnoxious.
And they'd seen the response they'd got when they brought the Warrior back. So mm-hmm. For all that they'd run the billionaire...
I mean, that's a stretch. That is a stretch. We brought back the Warrior and we got huge ratings. Who can we look through the Rolodex? Honky. Let's bring Honky back. He'll pull in the punters.
The thing is, you're laughing. I think that's what Vince was actually thinking.
Jerry Lawler had a word in his ear.
What have WCW got on the other side? Well, they've just got Hogan, and he's in this newfangled heel group, NWO. They're kicking ass. How can we combat this? Let's bring back Honky. Why not? It's a winner. It's good shit, pal.
Again, Mags, they got the best person they possibly could for the money.
For the money, exactly.
So what did you think to the match overall?
This was probably one of Brett's worst ever matches. I feel really bad for him because we know how good of a ring technician he is, but we now also know that he doesn't know how to polish a turd, because this was a very, very poor match.
You say he doesn't know how to polish a turd. At least he tried.
He did try.
At least he tried. And he made it, again, I'm going back to it, theme for the show. It was there. But to have a Bret Hart match that's just there, imagine if it had been almost anybody else, it would have stank the place out. So credit to Bret for making it tolerable.
Yeah.
And it didn't outstay its welcome, at least.
And I suppose the one kind of saving grace for this match is it was really kind of to show Brett's new aggressive style and his new like angry attitude. I mean, like he threw Razor into the steps and into the guardrails, into the ring post. He was starting that little heel turn. So we do see that, but all in all, it's like you've said, all the matches on this show have just been filler, and it's been the commentary that's carried the show, the commentary and the adverts that have carried this show.
And that's why I stand by that statement that if this event had Jerry Lawler versus Stable in the Milton Bradley Karate Fighters match, that would have been the match of the night.
it's sad that we're laughing about it, but it's very true.
Yeah. So then we go to a segment with Shawn Michaels, and Vince is asking the questions from commentary, and Shawn Michaels is kind of watching TV, so he's got his back to the camera, and you'll sort of see over his shoulder that he's watching TV.
Clearly, he's never watched wrestling before. You sit, you stand like side on, you watch it out of one eye, so you can also be on camera at the same time. Just unprofessional by Shawn Michaels. Unprofessional.
Did you see those series of videos that Nyla Rose did at the start of the pandemic, where she was like watching TV like a wrestler sort of thing? Mm-hmm. A girlfriend was there going, "What are you doing? I'm watching TV. Why are you stood there? Oh, it's the best angle." And then there was another one where she was trying to change a light bulb and she kept falling off the stepladder.
I'm gutted I missed them.
Oh, it was brilliant. So in this promo, Sean's quite pissed off with Vince for his questions. He's being quite surly. He feels like he's acting like a Gen X teenager. And I don't know.
It was a dick. I think this is Sean's natural state. I don't think he was doing any acting whatsoever. He was just being the dick that Shawn Michaels is. I mean, every question he was like, "Yeah, so." It was literally like Lauren from, what's the program called? Catherine Tate Show, like, "Am I bothered? Am I bothered?" It was that kind of arrogant, petulant child.
It was the "I'm too good for this. Get to your point. You're talking shit. Up yours. Yeah. Fuck you." But that's the attitude, isn't it? That's the attitude part of the attitude era. That's what they're going for. That was the that was one of the first glimpses of that shining through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know with this promo if it was awful or if it was a genius
ahead of its time kind of thing.
Yeah, it tapped into the pop culture of the time or whatever. You know, and it's sort of treading that line. It's difficult to tell that, you know, when you look back.
And that kind of links back to something Dan said earlier, and it shows that WWE were trying to be edgy and cool, but still had one foot stuck in the mid-80s, and they just needed to go all in on attitude. Just weren't ready to do that.
Yeah. So what did you think of the show overall?
It was 47 and, 40 seconds of time that I will never get back. So thanks for that.
Yeah, you got to spend time with us, Max.
I mean, that's the saving grace. The actual best part of this show was ripping it to shreds in this format.
Do you know what the sad thing is about this show? The week before is worse.
But it has the Karate Fighters match.
Which was terrible.
I've watched that. That was good. That was the best match.
It was 2.5 million good.
Yeah. But yeah, this was actually better than the week before. But based on the week before, I can understand why this was the lowest yet. Because the week before was just utterly woeful. And I've tried to judge this on its own merits, but after seeing what the week before was, I think I've probably been a bit more generous come the end of it, because I'm looking at it, these matches going, do you know what? They exist. There's nothing outstandingly bad. It's all fine. But the week before, I was looking at it going, this is shit. So I might adjust some of my ratings on the fly, but yeah, I thought it was mostly serviceable. The least important part of this wrestling show was the wrestling. The commentary was very good. A couple of decent little production things, like the gold spotlight on Goldust and Marlena, I thought they upgraded the match graphics when they were advertising. They were using split screen rather than picture in picture or those fucking phone calls. They've done a couple of times phone calls to wrestlers not even involved in the match in any way. But yeah, it was just.
I mean, for comparison, I actually went and checked out the results of what happened on Nitro, and you can see why it's beating it. The Nitro episode opens with Eddie Guerrero versus Chris Benoit in a United States title semifinals match, and it's an absolute banger. It's a really good match. I mean, they've still got some terrible matches. They've still got Lex Luger on. They've got Rey Mysterio against Mr. JL. Glacier's involved. But the difference is they've got promos with the NWO, who was really caning to the stride at this time. They've got the Horsemen. It's just night and day. You've got a wrestling program that feels real, that you're excited to watch because you don't know what's going to happen. And then you've got Raw, which is trying to be like that, but only in really small glimpses, and is still harkening back to the tried and tested old school style of wrestling.
I will not hear a bad word said about Glacier.
I mean, I did not say a bad word. I'm saying he was involved.
It was in the tone of your voice. I saw it in your eyes, Max.
I implied it was bad.
We stand Glacier on this show. No, we don't. Stand's a horrible word, do we?
I mean, he beat Buddy Lee Parker in 2.5 minutes. So, and it also, this is from 411 Mania, so don't shoot the messenger. It says he did one of the worst snapmares ever. So, and he also whiffed his finisher and had to do it again.
It would have been the best match on this show.
It's funny because it's true.
Oh, it's so true.
And it may not even have been the most technically good match, but it'd have at least been the most entertaining.
And I feel bad because, you know, that last episode of Nitro that me and you reviewed, Dan, was probably the best episode that we've watched so far doing the podcast, and then we've dropped down to this. It's a real shift. Anyway, we'll do the awards for the show. That'll be uplifting. So, who would you give match of the night to?
Max?
I mean, I don't want to say match of the night. That implies that there was a good match. What I would say is least terrible match of the night. And for that, I'm going to go with the opener. I think it was the one that had the best wrestling, I suppose, and that's in very much inverted commas. But it was the whole kind of the storyline with Goldust and Marlena, and the runoff with Jerry Lawler. I was interested in that happening rather than the match, and I suppose that kept me more intrigued in that match than any of the other matches. So I'd have to go with that one, I think.
Dan?
I'm going to give it to Piero and Cybernetico versus the New Rockers because I like the Luchadors' masks.
Well, it's something. I'm going to give it to the Bret Hart versus the fake Razor match because A, Bret Hart's in the match.
Fair.
And B, people, maybe not 2,925, I'm assuming some of those had already gone home by this point, but certainly people sat through 17 matches for that main event of that entire card of Bret Hart versus fake Razor. And I think we have to give it to the crowd for staying.
Yeah.
It's when you're five down and like the entire, you know, the opposition fans are chanting, "We can see you sneaking off," you know.
I've just realised as well, we've gone through all of that saying fake Razor. We could have just shortened it to F Razor and just called him Fraser.
Fraser Ramon. That's what WCW should have done, Fraser Ramon. The distinct from. So who would you give MVP of the show to?
Again, who really stands out? To be fair, I'm gonna give it to Sunny. I think when she came down to the ring, people were interested. She did what she needed to do. She got over the spots that she needed to get over. She also got three blokes on the comment to all have stitches at the same time. So yeah, I've got to give it Sunny. I've rephrased it wrong. I don't want to give it to Sunny. Sunny was my MVP of the night.
Yeah, I'm also going to choose my words carefully and give Sunny MVP of the night. I know she gets a bad rap, and you know people are saying about how maybe they objectified her, that kind of thing. But I think she was really good at drawing heat. I think she was really charismatic, and I don't think what she did was her best work on this show, but it was one of the few highlights of a pretty dire show. So I'd give MVP of the night to Sunny.
I'm going to make it a clean sweep. You say it wasn't Sunny's best work on this show, but it was still some of, if not the best work on the show.
Yeah.
I was very tempted to give MVP of the night to JR, just for the extra dimension he brought to the commentary. He, you know, he kept it flowing. He put a lid on Vince quite well. Because you know, we know from these episodes we've reviewed, Vince can go, often when he gets really excited, he goes really loud, off on tangents, blah, blah, blah. JR marshalled that really well throughout the show. But Sonny just stood out. And I'm going to draw a comparison with a more modern wrestler who went on commentary and marshalled things very well, and it was AJ Lee. Whenever she was on commentary, she got what she needed to say. She had the quick wit to get around, you know, to get around people, like that infamous line she said to King about her age and all of that. And there was vibes of that from Sunny here. She had she had the smart little remarks, the innuendos that she turned around on people, and yeah, she really, really stood out.
Excellent. So a clean sweep there. We now get to the most important part of the show, the Rene Goulet Award for Haircut of the Night. So, Mags, who would you give that to?
Yeah, there's only one winner for me on this. He's won multiple mullet of the show awards, and he's in line for this Rene Goulet Memorial Award. It's got to be Psycho Sid. Floppy, curly perm, all dripping with grease. Yeah, you can't beat that. Looked like it was chiseled out of granite, and with a perm off straight off a shaggy dog. So yeah, I've got to go with that.
Yeah. Fair enough. I'm keeping it. I'm kicking it old school. I know it's the Rene Goulet Living Memorial Award now. Mags, you missed a word out, but I'm gonna go with Sal Sincere for rocking a proper old school mullet. That thing was almost a flat top on top, and then the long flowing locks at the back. It's strong, strong. He had a stronger mullet than he had a career in WWF.
That wouldn't have been hard, though, would it? Cesaro's got a stronger mullet than he had a career.
I mean, talking about hair, there was I'm sure it was Honky who said something on commentary. He said that Fraser Ramon's hair was greasy. And I thought, How have you got the audacity to say that when your hair is 95% grease?
Yeah, that motherfucker looked like he dipped his hair in a bloody oil tanker.
Yeah.
It's like that Owen Hart thing from two episodes ago where he's saying, Ahmed Johnson's too oily, and everyone in the ring is completely covered in oil. I'm going to go with Matt Marrow. I think his hair is the only thing he's got going for him. You know, all he can do is photobomb Sable's pictures in the magazine. Is a bit of an afterthought. He has a 38-week feud that nobody cares about. They talk about, you know, you get like comedy double acts, Anna and Deck, Markham and Wise, that kind of thing, and one of them's half a star. Matt Marrow wasn't even half. So I'm giving him the NAGULA.
I'd have loved to have been a fly on the wall for that photo shoot, because I guarantee that photographer was like, yeah, Mark, to the left a little bit, to the left, a little bit more. Sable, can you come to the front, please? Yeah, closer to the front. Mark, will you fuck off? Close the door behind you. Get outside.
Yes, we can still see you. It's an X-ray lens. Oh, Jesus, yeah. One of these days, I'm going to give the Rene Goulet Living Memorial Award to Goldust for his wig. It's going to have to happen.
It's going to have to happen. can save that for when we get to the Taylor and Sullivan episodes and we get the seven vignettes.
I don't want to acknowledge that ever existed, other than to rip it a new ass.
Doesn't wear a wig in them vignettes. I'm sure it's just an Undertaker hat and very scary white face paint.
I believe he was wearing a merkin.
So how much would you rate the show out of 10, Mags?
Oh, are we allowed to go minuses? I mean, no. To be fair, you can see that they're trying to come into the 90s, as it were. There were slight highlights. I mean, like we said, Bret Hart's slow heel turn was decent. The storyline with Goldust, that was really picking up steam. Sonny was one of the highlights of the show. So it wasn't exactly a dud, but it's not something I would happily go back and rewatch and have fond memories of. So I think 2 is generous. So I'd go with 2 out of 10.
Oh, you sweet summer child. You sweets, you haven't seen the things that I've seen.
You haven't lived the life I've lived.
I was there on that previous Raw, sitting through that crap. Sorry, Rob, I'm assuming you're coming to me next.
Yeah.
The worst crime the matches on this show commit, as we've said before, is that they are just bland. There's nothing that grabs you. I can't do my usual full-on breakdown because I didn't have the time to get the rant in. As I mentioned before, there was some good production stuff. The promos were decent. Sonny was all right. Sonny was very good, sorry. But yeah, it's just bland. It's just bland and forgettable. So for me, it balances out about a 4.
You're very generous, Dan. Very generous.
It's because of the week before that I gave a 2.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 3. I think this is the worst show we've reviewed so far. And that's really disappointing, considering last week when we looked at WCW was the best.
You sounded like you really had a tear in your eye there as you were saying that.
The thing
Why
is,
have I you let me down, WWE?
I feel real, and you know, I mean, we talked about the magazine at the start, and obviously you guys hadn't read it. And I was just giving you the description. You know, you might have come to a different conclusion, but considering if someone in the crowd had bought a copy of the magazine, they would have been better off reading it than watching the wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an hour better spent. And you can tell that if Vince has like slammed that into the meeting and said, we need the show to be more like this, that Cornette and Pritchard must have been resistant, because if this is the content that they put out, they clearly didn't want to push the way the magazine was going.
Yeah,
I agree.
Disparity of tone, as you keep saying, Dan.
Yeah. So, like I said, I know I've been a bit more generous, but I think if I'd not watched the previous week's episode, and I could have dragged my head out of my ass and actually judged this on its own merit completely, I'd have probably scored it lower. But it's still not as bad as the week before.
As I say, I only watched 5 minutes of that, but it was gold. So
that Karate Fighters thing that we keep going on about, it took me until about 2 minutes in to realise that it wasn't some form of elaborate advert. I mean, I know it was, but I didn't realise they'd done a whole tournament leading up to it.
I'm actually going to watch it. I'm actually going to go back and watch. Not the show. I'm not mad. I'm going to watch that Karate Fire match.
And it's probably been redacted from the Peacock version, but anyone outside America, I suggest you go and watch the Karate Fighters match.
Don't do it, it's a trap. If you're going to watch it, watch the whole episode and feel the pain I feel.
So where can people find you, Mags?
So you can find me watching the Karate Fighters match at home right now. You can find me on Twitter at DJ Kurtber, where I put out an inordinate amount of not just wrestling content, but just content in general. You'll find all the links on my one and only social media, that is the Twitters.
You can find me on Twitter at DanGriffin21. As Rob said, I'll be tweeting 25-year-old movies and wrestling that's a minimum 6 weeks out of date. I'm also on the monthly pay-per-view reviews on that 90s wrestling podcast with your good self, Rob, and your good self, Mags. That's at 90s Wrestling Pod. And I also, whenever Rob is asleep, take over the @UTT podcast Twitter account. I've not tweeted any weird shit yet, but it's only a matter of time before I forget which account I'm on.
Oh my God, I want you to be watching a terrible show and you're on that counter by accident and go, this show is fucking bullshit.
It's only a matter of time, it really is.
It's like clockwork, but you don't wind the key, you just give him some beer and he's off and away. You can find me at UTT Rob. I always say that I'm more than happy to follow back. It's more about mutuals than followers, so if you want to follow me, I'll follow back. I often put questions on there, so have a debate about wrestling. Again, you can follow the show at UTT Podcast. It's sometimes me on there for the more measured responses to any questions you might get. To find the show, either search your favourite podcast provider for UTT Podcast or on Booking the Territory, or we're also available on the same channel as That 90s Wrestling Podcast. And you can find on there the monthly pay-per-view reviews that we do and also interviews that James does with people like Rob Van Dam, Vince Russo, etc. So next week, we're going on to the first week of our review of Vince Russo and Jim Cornette's time in charge of creative together, which will be interesting because if it was ever two people that were like oil and water, those are the two.
Yeah, hated each other.
Vince Russo in recent years took a restraining order out on Jim Cornette. So yeah. That probably shows you how they feel about each other.
Yeah, Jim Cornette threatened to kill him.
But at this time, they were keeping the murder to a minimum and trying to work together. So,
they were just murdering the wrestling.
I love the fact that the one who made the death threat is the one that took out the restraining order.
No, it was Jim Cornette that made the death threat.
Yeah, Cornette made the death threat and Vince Russo took the restraining order out.
Oh, I miss it.
Because you can actually get from, I don't know if you still can, but you could get a copy of the restraining order from Jim Cornette. Like, he'd basically, sign it and you could frame it, the restraining order that he got from Vince Russo.
That's one of the most wrestling things I've ever heard of.
And people bought it. He actually said on one of his shows that it was sold out.
How did that not get onto the weirdest wrestling merch Badlands?
It absolutely should have done. I may go and buy a copy of it. He also sells burger towels, which is...
Are they supposed to, dry your burger, or...?
No, he says, because he eats a lot of burgers like extra cheese, extra mayo, extra pickle. But he says the napkins that you get with a burger aren't sufficient enough, so he designed an actual towel, like a cloth. It's called a Jim Cornette burger towel.
He should have had a little compartment in the towel that when you were drying yourself after a shower would warm up the meat for a burger.
Do you know what? That would have been a brilliant added. That may have been stolen by a certain red and orange wrestler out there.
Taz.
I meant orange as in the tone of his skin and his political leanings.
Standing for the Lib Dems.
I fucking knew you were going to say that. In Aberystwyth, your Lib Dem candidate Hulk Hogan.
As much as you're saying about some shows getting redacted from Peacock, I'm sure that Hulk Hogan would get redacted from the Liberal Party if he became a member. Anyway, you can catch the show next week while we'll be carrying on our journey through the highest and lowest rated episodes for each creative period of the Monday Night Wars. Thanks for listening. You better watch out. The irony being that that wasn't recording when you said that. That's the funniest thing you ever said.
I hope you actually keep that bit in so people are wondering what the joke was.